There was a person here who was supposed to turn the button so we could start exactly on time. I'm going to assume the button has been pressed and that we are being recorded for all the good things that will be said and all of the very intelligent remarks that will be offered to this discussion. It's a very interesting topic. The topic that you're here to listen to is building successful relationships based on equality. And the talk has been prepared very well by Renee Carlson, who is she's a native of Utah and has an education in sociology, BA, that's Bachelor of Arts, George Washington University, and a Master of Social Work from Catholic University. She has extensive experience in working with groups in social customs, social work, people problems. I'm a scientist, and so it comes a little difficult, although I spent 7 years as dean of a college of science, and if you talk about finding ways to work with people, just try it sometime, you know. But Renee has experience, professional experience in working as a referral therapist in the LDS Social Services Service, and has a private practice at the present time, and she's made many workshop presentations on community-based and local school and church groups. She organized and led women's support groups on self-determination, definition, and marriage-related problems. That is from 1990 to the present. Now, this is another addition to this illustrious career today, and we're fortunate to have her with us today. She is a member and treasurer of the Daughters of Utah Pioneers.
You don't need to fill all that stuff.
Well, you know, I was wanting to make sure.
I belong to AAA.
I want to make sure. Renee, don't be so modest.
No, let's just get to it.
We're going to have a good time. And you see how you see this kind of interaction? What we wanted to do, we had a discussion here to get you all involved, because we're talking about social responsibility, our personal lives, and how we can work together in this very important area of family relationships. So now, with great pleasure, I return the podium over to Renee Carlson. Later on, as she has discussion and we will want the presentations, we decide if you come up to the microphone, like I said, you get the blood flowing, the questions are nice and clear, and we'll all hear what's going on. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. But that member of Daughters of the Utah Pioneers, that is my big star. Where did you get that? Oh, on that. Okay. Oh. You didn't get to the second page. Anyway, I'm very happy to be here. And I thought that, you know, because we're talking about a subject that is so intimate to everyone, I thought that it would be fun to have an enjoyable hour. Okay, so, and I'm going to elicit a lot of responses from all of you. And I want to get you, most of the time when I do this, you know, I don't have to hang on to a microphone. You know, we go all through and people just spring up and it's a lot more fun. So, but they're trying to record this. So I am going to ask some questions and I would like to elicit some responses. And so when you raise your hand and I want you to come up here, okay, and it'll be a little awkward, but we'll try that. Well, the first thing, because we are all church members, the first thing that I wanted to talk about is that there is a... How many of you have read the Proclamation on the Family? Okay, everybody has read the Proclamation. All right. You know, we're a little schizophrenic in the things that we talk about around relationships in our church, because in the Proclamation on the Family, it says that the male, and we all know this, is to preside, but that we are to have relationships of equality. And that just the fact that leadership in the church is gendered to the male, there's an underlying situation that we all have to deal with in trying to achieve equality, because it's already skewed. Now, the problem is this just is not just in our church. This is a worldwide issue for men and women. Patriarchy has been around for eons of time, and women have adjusted to that. Now we're in a time of tremendous change where women are starting to equalize out with men. I mean, we're not, it's not just not women in the home. Women are moving out into the workplace, into women are not isolated into a certain role anymore, and men are encouraged to be in the home as well. And you know, we're trying to move into, I sound like Clinton, a bridge to the 21st century. And we're trying to move into a time of equality. And one would assume that as we do that, we will enhance relationships. Now, I know that in a time of turmoil, which has been, you know, maybe for, well, in my lifetime, there have been a lot of changes. And as women started moving in their perceptions closer to wanting more authority in their families and in the society, it had a way of dislodging relationships in a lot of ways, because change is difficult, and if we don't change in a way that is helps both people who are involved in change, then you're going to get a lot of conflict. So in the last, 50 years, we've had a lot of divorces and a lot of conflicts in marriage. And so now we're in a situation where we would really like to try, and you see this with your children, where they're really trying to equalize out some of the roles and responsibilities and the issues in being in a couple. And a lot of them are doing a pretty good job, but we need a lot of education. And that's one thing that I do as a marriage and family therapist is I help couples get educated into how to talk to each other and how to be in a relationship where there is mutual respect and where each person feels actualized and that they are going to be able to live their life in a happy, satisfying, wonderful way in relationship to their partner. And it's not something that can't be done. What you really need to do is you need to really work on it. And you need to get the tools in order to be able to do that. And always when I'm talking to people in our culture, the Mormon culture, there has to be one underlying issue that gets cleared up right away. And I would say that this is in a lot of cultures, but in ours especially, because we've been very slow to move to a position of equality. A lot of different places in our society now there's a feeling that the appropriate way to be is to be equal. But still, we're just lagging a little bit, as we're slow to change. In that we still have a very gendered society, and the women are kind of walking on eggs, trying to figure out, you know, how they get where they need to go, and the men are very agitated actually because they don't want to give up. It feels like giving up. Something that is known and something that they can count on. And I mean, whoever in the world wants to give up presiding? Anybody you want to? All right, that's wonderful. Okay, we have some outstanding men in here. But the first thing that I want to ask, and I want to get, you know, some responses, is, and because I always think it's really interesting to ask women in the presence of men how they deal with the situation of having men be in more with more power. Now, they've grown up with this as little girls. Some societies, which Charlotte and I were talking about earlier, which are in Africa and other places, I mean, there's not even a movement going on to equalize things. I mean, you know, the women have no power and the men have power. But in America, you know, we've got this big movement on. And it, of course, it's going to affect our church. This is just going to do it. But what I'd like to do, just for us who are in this room, is to find out how the women in this room, in this day, right now, handle the issue around husbands presiding. So I've talked to a lot of women, and I get a lot of different responses. The first, I'll give you one response that I get. The first one is, well, the men need to have the priesthood because the women are better. Have you heard that one?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a Relief Society one. Now, okay, that does smack of inequality. Did you hear that? I mean, it really does. You know, I mean, this poor little boy, I have to take care of him. He doesn't know, you know, which way is up. And so it's a big, huge put down, okay? And if you put that into your relationship and you acted that way to your partner, you would certainly be humiliating him. And often, you know, that happens, and women do humiliate men. So that's not a good one. All right, what are some others? I'd just like to hear, you know, because we're all human beings, and as women, we are human beings, and so we try to equalize power. I mean, we don't want someone to be more powerful than we are. We don't want to be on the bottom rung. We want, you know, we will go for equality in some way, whether it's straightforward, under the table, or over the top. Okay, so yes, would you come up? Tell us how you handle that.
How I handle that?
Yeah, how do you, you know,
I would like to say this, that implicit, as I hear it, in the assumption that one gender has more power than another, there's already an obvious error. There, power is only a matter of perception, right?
Right.
Unless, of course, you're talking about testosterone and who's going to wrestle who and put his neck or put his foot on her neck, or what, you know what I'm saying?
Do you think that plays a big, you know, has a lot of power in a relationship between
men? If you're looking for power, you're already wrong. Okay. I mean, how can you have equal and one have power and the other one not?
Well, so that's true, except for there is more power of decision-making, more power of presiding over, you know, the family or a group that is just given to a gender, that is given to.
You mean societally it is an accepted form, not that it's given, or do you mean that?
Well, I mean it is given by the society. It is bequeathed.
And either accepted or rejected by the people to whom it is.
Right.
Given.
And so how do you handle that?
I say it's erroneous, and I don't deal with it on the basis of he has or she has more power. Power lies in your ability to be flexible, perceive the situation, act in honesty, good relationship intentions with each other, whether it's male or female. I don't like the idea of putting a gender against a gender and saying,
all right.
And wasn't there once matriarchy? I heard there was.
Right. So that's a good response, and you know, if you'll forgive me to comment on that, you have redefined the problem. Because you have said that the perception is not really real of power and presiding, that it only, right, and that's how you handle it. And probably in a relationship, you take your power.
No, I don't want power. I
okay.
want a
Okay. All right. So you will define power as a voice. I mean, that's semantics.
Your opinion validated.
Right.
Feels good whether you're a male or a female.
Right.
And of course, it'll only be validated if it's a good opinion.
Okay. So you just take your personhood into the relationship.
Oh, that's the word I have to use. Thank
you. Okay. All right. Back there, do you want to come up? Okay. How do you handle it?
Well, I was just going to discuss the power thing. We could talk for hours on mm-hmm. what power is to different people. There's various ways to look at it, but one thing that's really clear with my own life situations was power, financial power. Women don't have as much financial power in general in society. Handling it in relationships depends on who you're with. If you're with an abusive person who's a control freak, you handle it a whole lot different than with someone who's egalitarian. If you're in an egalitarian relationship, everybody just says what's real for them, and you discuss it with rationality and with caring and consideration. If there's respect between parties, it's a whole lot different using your power than if you have to fight to have power over your own self mm-hmm. every minute.
Mm-hmm. So does it affect you at all to have an overlay over the top that says that where there is sort of like an atmosphere of gendered that he has more to say in value or in what happens or you use the issue of money than you. How, if you were with someone who did that, who had more, just the society giving that right. as a gift.
Right.
How do you deal with that?
How do I deal with that? Sometimes it's impossible to deal with it. If you have a bunch of children and you have no way to go and work outside of the home and bring in money to make your own financial choices equal to his or have as much say in financial choices, you divorce him. That's what I do.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's one way that you can deal with it. And that's a way that, a lot of people have dealt with that. But understand that you might not have to deal with things. Thank you. Thanks for both of you. You might not have to deal with things particularly that way if it were not so set up that way. That that you might be able to use the skills that the two of you would bring to the relationship in order to get resolution so that the playing field is level. Yes, why not?
I think a difficulty is the perception that preside implies hierarchy or is taught as hierarchy and power. It doesn't necessarily, they're not two words that are intertwined and never to be separated. Preside can also be construed as service, as caring, as service is my favorite word. So I would prefer to teach preside as a service philosophy as opposed to a power and hierarchy philosophy. And so then you look at it that way, and it isn't a I got mm-hmm. it. I want it. Who's got a voice?
So do you think that we're headed to trying to do that as a society, or do you think that we're still sort of stalemated?
Are we headed that way? No, but I'd sure like to push it.
Okay. So this is another redefinition.
Yes, it is. Definitely
right.
A redefinition that
okay.
that preside does not necessarily imply power and authority and hierarchy and better than somebody else in some way.
Okay. And do you think that as things move along, say, in equalizing things between men, that that's how priesthood and presiding and all will be interpreted in the church?
Ultimately, with the after the eons of influence, yes.
How many eons?
Too many.
Okay. All right. You didn't want to say anything else? This is good. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Yes. Yeah, this is Fast and Testimony meeting.
I mean, I'm probably the wrong one to speak because I chose not to marry someone with the priesthood after dating every RM I could find at the U of U. But even if it's a reasonable guy and you strike this balance, there's this deus ex machina thing where ultimately the priesthood could just swoop in and take over regardless of what you do as a couple. And I cannot fathom how Mormon women can equalize that in their relationships. It just amazes me.
Okay. So you chose not to participate.
Basically.
Okay.
But after a lot of thought and weighing it, and being told I'd stay home full time and that there were all these rules on me.
Okay. All right. So that's how you handled it.
That's how I handled it.
Okay. All right. Okay, we have another person over here.
I've been married for over 25 years, and I remember one of the first discussions we had married in our marriage was my husband explaining to me that it was much like being in the mission field, that he was the senior companion, and that I did need to learn to follow. And I've always been the kind of person that has been extremely difficult for me. And so I would say that we've been locked in a power struggle much of our marriage, and it's really kind of an unfortunate thing. And I would like to do what you described of perception change so that I can get out of that power struggle. But I see, as I look back over the years, I have to admit that a lot of that has occurred, and I think it's sad because we have probably hurt each other a lot more than I would have liked to have done in our marriage. But some of the ways I've coped with it, eventually went into therapy and went back to school, got my master's degree, and I think as the power dynamics shift and change, I think there has been improvement. And my husband's a very well-intentioned person, but it's been difficult, and I don't think it's an easy challenge.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Yes, from the fairer sex.
I'd like to speak for my wife.
What'd I tell you?
37 years ago, on August 12th, we were married in the Salt Lake Temple. 2 days later, we were on the Queen Elizabeth going to Europe, and my wife waved me into the gymnasium in the Queen Elizabeth II, and next thing I knew, I was flat on my back looking up at her beautiful face. And I got up and shook myself and said, "What happened, Cherry?" I married Cherry Bushman. And she said this, and she threw me again in a judo throw. And I asked her where in the world she had learned judo. She had been director of the Radcliffe Graduate Center. She was putting herself through on her doctoral program, and the Boston Strangler was around and about. And if you know Cherry, you know that she always finds solutions to problems, and so she decided to learn judo at Harvard. Ever since then, we have presided over our family together. And I think this is the error of the proclamation on the family, that it should be stated, a man and woman preside jointly, and I bear you my witness that this works.
Good. Thanks, Bernie. Thank you. I knew Cherry at the University of Utah. We never did judo or anything together, though. But powerful woman, right. Okay, any other responses? Yes.
My solution to that problem as a recently returned missionary with a lot of aggressive type tendencies and not very submissive nature was to marry a convert who didn't fully misinterpret the idea of preside. And he's 4 years younger than I am, very young and naive in church experience. And I trained him. He was my greenie. But I think that the way that he's maintained it as he's grown in his own right, though, is to stay humble and really learn what it means to preside and to communicate. And we communicate in great detail. And I've been told by other members of my family that hear us talking to each other, I could never talk to my husband the way you talk to your husband. And we're never rude to each other, but we do communicate a lot. And I think that says a lot for what can be achieved by two people who really want to.
Very good. That's wonderful.
What do you say, learn how to preside? What do you
do? Yeah, that's good, because this is a how-to.
I think we took our model. I grew up the child of a man who was a bishop several times and then a counselor in the stake presidency. And we took kind of our model as a bishop and counselors, not as a hierarchical model, but as one that the bishop is the one who has been arbitrarily selected to have the final word, but he's probably really scared to make it and would appreciate all the input he could get before that has to be made, feels the weight of the decision, and therefore really needs help working through it. And that's what a counselor is for, is to counsel him. What does a counselor do? They counsel you. You know, not... We change roles at times because situations require it. I have a lot more experience. My dad's a financial planner. I have a lot more experience with finances. There are times that his decision as bishop is to defer to me to make the decision or something like that. So so we take turns making decisions in areas that are, you know, they make sense. But I think the whole idea is that it does make sense. We're humble. We defer to each other. And I recognize that in situations in which we disagree and have struggled through everything, he has been arbitrarily selected to have the final word on things. And I know that's harder on him than it is on me. And I think that we both appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, one last one, and then we're going to... Okay.
I just wanted to say I've been married twice to men who held the priesthood, and both were bishops. And I've never once in my marriage ever felt I was not equal, ever. And it's because I won't allow it. And it kind of goes to what your feelings and your perceptions of yourself are. And I am equal to my husband, and I will never feel like I'm not, no matter, you know, whether they're a bishop of a ward or whatever, and any decision that our family makes will be made together. So.
Okay, good. Okay, one more from the other side. Okay.
The other side.
The other gender.
It's my wife is laughing. I haven't even started.
Use the microphone, please.
My wife is laughing, and I haven't even started. I don't know what that means.
Well, don't be too long.
I won't be. It seems there are situations where one party in a marriage is perhaps a dominating one, and those get resolved, and probably work out to be good marriages. I have some examples of that. The real question, this is equality, a situation where there are probably two hard-driving, dominant people in a marriage. How do you resolve that? Our panelist, or our moderator, our speaker, we ought to put the question back to her. I've known Renee and her late husband Jack longer than either of us would ever want to admit. I mean, really from college and before. Jack was a very hard-driving, aggressive, not aggressive isn't the right word, but wanted to succeed very much. Renee was much the same way, right from college on. I've known them long enough to know that they resolved, I think, basically the issues within the church. I think they had an awfully good marriage. I've been close enough to them to see it and to know it. And I think the question we ought to put back to Renee, I mean, here's the person who pulled all this off, along with raising seven kids. And our question is, with two dominating persons in a marriage, how did you do it? Give us some hints and throw it back to you.
Wow, that was nice. Thanks, Al.
I just straightened that.
Good, and a nice segue, too. Okay, well, you can see by all of the different responses that we have that everybody handles hierarchy, priesthood, presiding, all the things that we have in our culture in their own way. And the key is, things are going to move along. There are sociological changes. There's all these different things. But it's really what I do every day is help people to find a way to get along with each other and to love each other and to have intimacy and wonderful sex and great happiness and peace and contentment in their marriages. And the best way to do that is to learn some skills. And I would say for young people who are just forming relationships that it's very, very important to start out on the right foot in the sense of the equality issue and not bring in a lot of doctrine and a lot of overlay into a relationship. Because when you realize how you fall in love, that you fall in love with someone who has characteristics and who is familiar. Otherwise, you wouldn't be attracted to that person if there wasn't something about them that reminded you of someone you love. Whatever that is, you have to think about it. But that's a pretty good theory in marriage therapy, is that you were attracted to someone who had characteristics probably of a parent. And whether they were good, bad, indifferent, or whatever, they felt familiar. That person felt familiar. And it was a mutual thing. And so there was, some sparks and there was some attraction there for you to really get intimate with that person. And so it wasn't a matter of, gender stereotypes or anything like that. What it was you felt close. And that feeling of being close is the feeling that you need to retain throughout your marriage. And how it gets destroyed is through bringing negative assumptions to your partner, which is not checking out the things that you're thinking with your partner, just assuming that they're thinking or doing or motivated in some way that you've figured out, but that may not be true about them. So there is a lot of, in an equal marriage, there is a lot of explaining oneself that has to go on. And if you don't explain yourself so that the other person is able to hear you, then they will not understand you. And it's kind of like, if you really love me, you would do such and such. Okay? But you don't know. If you really loved a person, what would you do? What would they want you to do if you really loved a person? You've got to get that feedback because your partner is not a mind reader. And that hurts a lot of people because they say, you don't put yourself in my shoes, you don't know how I'm feeling, all of that. So what you have to do is put yourself in the other person's shoes and to find out what they are feeling. And that makes it so you have to talk to them. Now, a lot of people have a lot of problems when they talk to their partner because what they do is they say, you do such and such, or you say, and when you say something about somebody and you say you attribute something to them, you have put them on the defensive because what do they have to do? They have to defend themselves because you didn't get it quite right. You don't know. You just don't know what they are thinking. And so the only way to clear all of that little underbrush and that little messiness out of the way is to always just say, I'm feeling alone. That gives your partner the opportunity to know what it feels like to be in your shoes. Then you can say, I'm hearing that you're feeling alone. And then you go deeper. Why are you feeling lonely? And then, what can I do to make you feel less lonely? And then you get in deeper, 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 so that you get into the other person's psychological space and into their boundary. And then it feels like you are together. And that's really what people are talking about when you feel so close and you feel so connected to your partner. And it's hard, you know, maybe it's hard for men and women because they have so many stereotypes of each other. You know, if you listen to common conversation, you hear, oh, women are like da-da-da-da-da. Or then it's, oh, men are like such and such. And we start believing that stuff. You know, and then we start attributing it to the individual of that sex. And those are stereotypes. We live off of stereotypes. You know, I mean, we all live off of stereotypes because it's our protection. You know, if you kind of know a little bit about somebody because you just have heard a little bit about them. You don't really know them or anything, but you're coming off of that. And so then you start protecting yourself. And I think that that's one of the toughest things in gender issues, is that we are just so loaded with stereotypes. And the other thing is we are loaded culturally with stereotypes. And from all this conversation that we have had, it's really, you know, we're thinking that men, because they have the priesthood, are different from women who don't. You know what? We're all pretty much alike. Okay? And that becomes, you know, something that is talked about and something that is used, but it doesn't have to be in a relationship. We're just people. And when we relate to each other that way, and actually when we relate to our children that way, you know, we stereotype children. I mean, you know, children go through stages of development. We all know that. And they have different stages where they are able to accomplish different things. But, you know, we have expectations that are very different from what they're able to do often. And then when they finally reach adolescence and move on into adulthood and all, we still have stereotypes about what are teenagers, all this stuff that we keep dealing with, and we keep forgetting to just deal with them as a person. You know, what is their personality like? How can we be close? And then, you know, we need to always keep the one thing in a family that is so important is to be able to keep the sibling system separate from the parental system. And we do that in order to maintain authority and to be able to not have children get into the parents' marriage. I mean, that's, you know, we have a lot of powerful children that assume that they're a part of the marriage, and we allow that, you know, when we don't get along with each other in a couple. But when you keep things separate and you just let the children move along in the sibling system, there comes a time in the life of every person when they are on their own, and they don't really need their parents, and so you transition into a friend. But you can keep the intimacy. And that's where people have a lot of problems in relationships, is how do you keep that closeness to another person without injuring, you know, as over the years, what we do to each other and all of the assumptions we make and everything. How do you keep that so that you're still on a level of keying into them, putting yourself in their shoes, getting rid of all the little hurts, all of that, so that you can still be intimate and close and be there with them emotionally. And it's tricky. But, you know, it's something that we all have to really try for. And if we can do that, in our relationships, it probably makes for more happiness than anything that we would ever do in our lives. And so there's some of these little things that you can do, and I'm just going to list a few things. The learning the skills of confiding, and one of the things that you can do when you confide with someone is you listen. Do you know how many people have never learned to listen to their partner? It's like, I want to tell you all about me. And they don't keep their mouth shut and say, you tell me all about you. So that's a skill that people need to learn. That I just gave to you for clarity, that you need to mirror back so that you really, truly heard it. You didn't hear what you wanted to hear, or you didn't hear what you're, you know, projecting that they might say, but you're truly hearing what the other person says. So that's an important skill. And showing appreciation. You know how many of us do not show appreciation for what the other person does? We get up in the morning, you know, we go on our way, we do all of this stuff, and many, many people feel totally unappreciated. And if you make it a habit every day of telling your partner what you appreciate about them, it greatly enhances the relationship because we all want to be appreciated. So, and then there's something in doing caring behaviors. Have you doing nice little things? You know, I mean, there's all that stereotype about bringing the little wife flowers and things and she'll forgive you. But, you know, it's not the flowers. It's doing something that the other person would like to have done. Asking their opinion of something. Doing something that is especially good for them. Kind. That they want, not what you want. And not making deals. If I do this for you, you do this for me. That is not a gift. That's just a deal. So freely giving of your love and what you can do for the other person. Okay, how much time we got? Okay. Okay. So, I think that it's my experience, okay, that all this stuff about the overlays that we have will eventually get settled sociologically, that women will move up in their equality, that they will be out in the workforce, that we'll all start looking at each other just as human beings, and we won't necessarily be in big hierarchies of authority or anything, but that we'll be more in relationships of friendship and of mutual help. And I think that you're even seeing in the business world. I mean, I know this sounds far-fetched, but a lot of businesses are moving into being in smaller groups and working collegially. And it's not so hierarchical where, you know, you got the big guy at the top and then, you know, everybody, the little robots and stuff. It's like people want to be acknowledged. People want to be honored. Everyone is much better educated, at least in the United States, and we're working on trying to get everybody educated. Then, and when you become educated, you want to take your own power. You want to be respected. You want to have, you know, be a part of what is going on, and you want to do a job that is significant, and you want to be acknowledged. And as we move on into, you know, a world that honors more of that, men and women will become more equal. And some of the structures that we have that are not equalizing men and women will slowly change. And it will probably just happen. And you know, the thing we have to worry about, I think, is that we don't get scared and get a backlash and move back and say, this isn't working, it's making people get divorces, you know, it's scary. Because when you get back into, like, fundamentalism or the myth, and then you need to move into the place of reality. What works? What really works in everyday life? What works in everyday life? Well, what works in everyday life is just to have a great relationship with all the people that are around you. And it's not, it doesn't get based on somebody telling you what to do all the time. It doesn't, you know, you don't do a great job when that happens. It gets based on mutuality. It gets based on respect. And so, you know, you start moving into all of that. And when you're moving into all of that, then everybody does a better job. Everybody feels better. So if you start getting scared to move into that, because it isn't tradition and it isn't what has been done in the past, then, you know, you go back. And you go back to those same problems that you had before. So I would just say, let's be courageous, you know, and let's move on and get into these relationships with our partners and with the people around us that are truly truly respectful. And show, you know, intimacy and love. And not worry about all this other stuff. And you know what? It's really almost what you said. Mm-hmm. It's the people taking their power and turning whatever, you know, is there in the myth of power or in the myth of overlay and just saying, look, I'm a human being just like you and we all work together. And when we all work together, we make it work. And some of us have different jobs. And we can support each other, but we all need to be in it together. Now, would you buy that? Okay, see, I would too. And I think that anything that starts taking us back and says, you know, don't do that. We don't want that. We have to be careful of that. Because this is a brave new world and the bridge to the 21st century. Okay, now I'd just like to open up to any questions. I've taken enough time, and have I changed your opinion? Yes. Oh, come up. They want it on tape. Well, I mean, it's a personality indicator, you know, and it measures, you know, your preferences and all of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of different tests out there. There's this test by it's a computerized test that you can take before you get married on compatibility. It's pretty good. I mean, you know, it's good for a therapist because you take this test and then you go through it and you see areas of disagreement where the couple haven't talked about. Like, do they want children? You know, basic things. And you can see where, you know, it's apparent that there are areas now that you need to have the couple discuss and come to some kind of mutuality so that they know where each other's coming from and all. So the tests that you can take, I mean, like Myers-Briggs is just an information test, but there are, you know, I'll tell you, I think that our preparation for marriage stinks. And I have talked to a lot of, back in Washington, we do this, the Association for Mormon Counselors. We've been doing some of these talks with bishops and counselors and Relief Society presidents because they're on the front lines. And it's real, some of the marriage counseling is not good, okay? And the premarital counseling is even worse. Because, you know, to Temple Recommend, you know, they're not going to sit there and talk about their problems. You know, they're going to try to look as good as possible to get into the temple. But the thing is that, you know, the bishops are not catching problems. And so then they go get married and then they have six kids and then all of a sudden they find they're totally incompatible. Right. Well, I mean, we need to do some of this. It's really important because some people do not have mutual goals. You know, I mean, they're just on different pages. Yeah, you got to come up here.
A couple of months ago, a daughter of some friends of mine got married, and they're very committed Christians, but, you know, not Latter-day Saints. And when I was visiting the daughter before they got married, she had this this book, workbook, and the fiancé did too. And I was absolutely impressed with it. It was published by some publishing company in the South Christian group. And it was absolutely fantastic. You went through different chapters on things like, and you answered questions like, what are the things I admired most in my mom, and in my growing up years, what experiences were best with my dad, that kind of business. And you compare them. You talk about your spiritual experiences, your spiritual goals. You talk about finances. I mean, I realize that a lot of this you don't really know till you get in the. But anyway.
Yeah, but you know what? The more that you know.
Right.
The better prepared.
And all of these things, they talk about things related to child rearing and who kind of will be doing what in the home and that kind of thing. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it makes me so sad that we don't really have an equivalent of that in our church. And the person who was marrying them, you know, said, you need to go through this before. And they worked on it for probably a couple of months together.
Yeah. Anyway. No, that it's true. There's been a lot of work in this field now. And there are a lot of different, let's see, I'm just trying to think. I cannot think of his name. But this test that I'm talking about is fairly similar to that. But the thing is we could do so much because we're so well organized. We could have some wonderful premarital courses for people who are contemplating marriage to learn some of the things that I talked about. You know, how do you talk to your partner? How do you resolve conflict? How do you have intimacy? How do you get rid of some of these overlays of things like I'm talking about, the power issues, so that you start out on the right foot as buddies and as friends, and so that you don't start getting a lot of the static and the assumptions, and I just call it trash coming into your relationship from the outside. And of course, you know, when you marry a person, you do accept their family, you accept their brothers and sisters, you accept their parents, all of that. And we have all of these silly commercials and things on, you know, that make fun of mother-in-laws and that, you know, and that minimize family relationships and that make it so that things are supposed to be funny, you know, and all that stuff. But things are relatively, when you get into a marriage, you want to make it work. And those things are not funny. They're very serious, and you should take them respectfully and seriously. And, you know, we just get a lot of silliness that comes into the relationships.
Well, I think what you've said is great suggestions, and my question for you, though, would be is, as you take those suggestions, and you, I think it would be apparent you would use them in your relationships in the church as well, with men and women, but there's still that underlying tone that the man does have the priesthood. And so even if you have a bishop or counselors on a committee that, you know, do respect personhood, there's that underlying tone that there's not the equality. And how do you address that? Are you suggesting that we just ignore that until, you know, sociologically it just dissipates on its own and hope it does? Or that would be my question.
Well, you know, the church is run by people. And I think that people talk to people. And I think as time goes on and, you know, we keep passing through eras where people realize that, you know, the other sex is not going to infect you or anything, you know, we all have a chance and we all have abilities and, you know, we don't condescend with people and, you know, all that stuff, that eventually that there will be enlightened leadership that will come up, and they will just say, like they did with blacks, you know, she's as good as you are. Let's all work together. And we can all, you know, receive help and revelation to run things from God. Right. I mean, what can you do? You know, because what I mean, otherwise you get blood in the streets and everything. You know, the thing is, too, the reason why it's so very difficult, or it has been through history, for women to take their power, in society, is women have little boys. And I know with my own children, I loved it when the women's movement came along. And when we nominated a woman as vice president, I was there at that convention. I mean, we were both Republicans and Democrats. So it wasn't matter. But anyway, I was so proud, you know, and I just thought, oh, you know, we're going to be a part of everything and you know, all of that. It takes a long time. But I also had to moderate what I was saying for my little boys. Because, you know, then that it was like, mother thinks that girls are better than boys, you know, and it's like, oh, no, don't get that message, you know, and so, you know, it's been this way, so we have to, because we live with each other, so the big thing is I think to be respectful, to be loving, to put yourself in the other person's shoes, you know, men are as wonderful as women, and women are as wonderful as men, and, you know, we're all human beings, and we all have these traits, and qualities and everything, and we all, but the bottom line and the nice thing about information on the family was it was a moral thing. It was like, you know, we should all be honest and, you know, all the good things, all the good values. And the drawback was, you know, the presiding and the power issues and stuff. So if we can kind of lay low on that and put out being a better person, you know, we'll do better. And then I think we just get these decisions. This and then Barney.
It seems to me that if we kind of ignore the issues of the men presiding, having the priesthood, the roles that are defined for men and women that are still part of what's taught in the church, and I think still implicit in the Declaration on the Family. If we ignore that, some women can do it okay, but I think for other women, if you say, well, it doesn't really matter, you just have, you know, you show love and respect for each other, I think what it really leads to is a passive-aggressive behavior on the part of women, and I think that's counterproductive.
Well, I agree, because in the beginning, you know, we talked about how do you handle it, because it is going to be handled in some way, and I agree with you, it does need to change. Because you don't want passive-aggressive behavior. So, you know, I mean, enlightened people have to be talking, not back down, say this is the best way to get to where we need to go, because we need to go where everything is straight, where everybody is respectful, and we don't have that kind of behavior, because the reason for that is that it's not equal in power. And that was in the beginning was what I was trying to bring out too, which is that's what we're living in right now. But that's also what we want to change. And if we can't change it from the top, we can certainly change it in our own lives. And that's kind of where you have to start, because, you know, if you don't start there, you'll never start any place. And then you go from there to something bigger. And I just want to tell you, I think it'll happen. It will change. But, you know, it's going to take some time. Charlotte, you want? Oh, and Barney, okay. We got just to both of you, and then we're through.
Well, we go through this all the time in our, we've talked to many people about this because it is such an issue, but I keep going back to the 121st section of the Doctrine and Covenants. And if we're doing what it says in that section, and it was given because apparently it was really needed, and if we're living by what it says in there, we don't have an issue of inequality, because they are using the priesthood in a way that is so loving and generous and never, never, ever overpowering anyone. It wouldn't be an issue in marriages, but I think we don't get reminded of that often enough, but we do think of the priesthood as just a power thing. And I think it if we read that and do as it says, the problem of working out who is running things and who is the counselors, it's nil. I mean, it's that way we all get to be expressing in clarity what it is that we're needing, we're wanting, because the person, it isn't because they're just in charge, it's because they have a gift of love and care enough that they don't use that authority in a way that's damaging at all to any individual in that family or in that relationship. So I think it's going back to just a really basic. I mean, I don't know. Now, maybe earlier you said this, but I think men and women see the world different. I think they think different, but I think that it can come together and have this absolutely wonderful, creative, imaginative whole process that can be very exciting. But it's very frustrating, and especially because a lot of stuff has been taken from women.
Right. But the thing is what you really want is for men and women to take both all their qualities now and combine them together so that, you know, you don't get such a... The reason why a lot of the differences develop is because of the inequality. And if you get people who are on the same footing, they will develop good qualities because they will have to work together, and then the differences are going to start falling away, and men and women are going to start understanding and loving each other a heck of a lot more.
That's right, and I think I think by not seeing a position as something higher than anyone else,
right?
You know, that's why I think once a person thinks that because they're the priesthood that they're above someone else, then like it says at the end of that thing, it says, "Amen to the priesthood."
Right.
If you ever
hierarchy is on its way out.
I don't think so.
Renee, it's most refreshing to be married to Cherry Bushman. And when the proclamation came out, she was on the Relief Society General Board. And she helped me analyze it very, very thoroughly. And we decided after analyzing it together that we presided together in the family. She wears the garment of the Holy Priesthood as well as I do. And I came to the conclusion that we share the priesthood together as co-presiders in the family. And second of all, she pointed out to me that the role of nurturing was as much my responsibility as hers. And she pointed out our son's very careful nurturing of his children and his wife. He is a better nurturer than his wife. And so I think we need to analyze the very precepts of that document and say, this is a document that is appropriate for its time, but I especially appreciate your suggestion of enlightened leadership that will really see the true relationship of men and women in a marriage role.
Thanks a lot.
I'm sure you all feel very well repaid for the time you sat here and you bore your testimony. Thanks again. Let's give Renee a real warm hand.